When it comes to artificial sweeteners, are you a yellow person or blue? Or pink or white, for that matter? If we're trying to avoid sugar, most of us have a preferred substitute. Equal, NutraSweet, the sweetener Sucralose, Stevia, Aspartame. But how much do we know about the safety of artificial sweeteners and their effect on the body? I'm Veronica Rickert, in for Kathleen Dunn, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guests this hour are Kenneth Chang, a science reporter for the New York Times, and Dr. Ayala Laufer-Kahane will be joining us the second half of the hour. She's a physician specializing in pediatrics and medical genetics. And Kenneth Chang, welcome. Now that we know that sugar is making us fatter and it's upping our risks of certain diseases, a lot of people are cutting back and have been trying to cut back for some time. Can you give us a sense of how big the artificial sweetener business is?
It's a fairly big business. So artificial sweeteners globally is about a $1.5 billion business. It's still small compared to sweeteners in general, which is about $60 billion a year.
Compared to what in general?
Sweeteners. So that's sugar, corn syrup, and all that.
So including the whole market.
Right.
Well, lay it out for us. What are the options that are out there?
Well, so I just went to my coffee station in my office, so I just picked up a pink packet, which is Sweet and Low, the yellow one, which is Splenda, and the blue one, which is Equal, and of course there's sugar as well. And these are the main sweeteners that are available in the U.S.
What about elsewhere? Are there other options if we go abroad?
Yes, in Canada, and actually most countries, there's a sweetener known as cyclamates, which the U.S. actually banned, I believe, in the 60s, because there were some studies in rats that indicated cancer. There's other studies that now indicate that perhaps that wasn't true, but that ban was never reversed in the U.S.
Hmm. Well, what do we know about how much of these artificial sweeteners Americans are consuming?
It's quite a bit. I mean, it depends on who it is. So I think most people actually are still using plain sugar. So that's probably what's contributing to the obesity problem. People who want to avoid it tend to go to these non-caloric sweeteners. I mean, there's also a few other ones. There's stevia, which comes from a plant. There's other ones, even less common ones like xylitol, or you could use maple syrup or honey as well.
Well, let's talk about stevia, because that's one that's been getting a lot of buzz lately. And the idea with stevia, or at least the appeal of stevia, is that it's more natural. It comes from a plant. And I even know people who have little stevia plants in their homes, and I guess they can somehow extract the sweetness from it in their own homes. But what is the deal with stevia?
So the FDA did approve it. So it's now in this category. It's generally recognized as safe, just as these artificial sweeteners are. And as you've noted, people have used this for centuries. But then again, people have used sugar as well for centuries. So, I mean, people chewed on cane sugar or ate beets for centuries and didn't have problems. It's only when we start drinking sodas in big quantities, one cup of soda has 10 teaspoons of sugar, that basically the overload is beginning to cause these health problems. So with stevia, in the quantities I've used traditionally, it doesn't look like it's causing any problems. If you start dumping the equivalent of 10 teaspoons into it, it's not as clear. It's natural, but that by itself doesn't mean it's safe. As I like to say, hemlock is also natural.
Well, as far as the quantity that it takes to get this hit of sweetness in the mouth, on the tongue, part of the appeal, I guess, of artificial sweeteners is that instead of needing 10 tablespoons to get sweetness, they're super concentrated, so you're really ingesting a much smaller amount. So you said it's 10 teaspoons of sugar in a cup of soda. By comparison, how much, say, aspartame would you need to get that comparable sweetness?
Aspartame, I believe, is hundreds of times sweeter, so it'd be 1/100th as much aspartame in a diet soda as there is sugar in a sugared soda, or high fructose corn syrup, probably more likely.
So if we're worried about chemicals, at least we're ingesting fewer of them.
Right, but if you worry about that chemical, obviously certain chemicals in low concentration might be a concern. So people have reported saying getting headaches from drinking diet soda, and I'm not sure that there's been systemic studies done on that, but if that's causing a problem for you, then you probably shouldn't drink it.
Well, tell us about some of the studies that are out there about these. You've said in your piece in the New York Times right now that you know, for every one of these sweeteners, it's possible to find a reassuring study and a scary study. So why don't you tell us some about what's out there?
Okay, so all these manufacturers, when they applied to the FDA to get approval, they've done animal studies where they gave these rats or mice humongous quantities of these sweeteners over a relatively short time, and they looked to see whether these animals developed cancer or other major health problems, and they managed to convince the FDA that they didn't. And usually this is how they do it for any sort of additive to foods. So they actually did go through and do their homework. On the other hand, there's a study in Italy that came out a few years ago where they wanted to look at the lifetime risk of these sweeteners. Aspartame is what they were looking at. And they gave a quantity that was more similar to what you actually get when you drink a Coke, not these super high quantities. And they let the animals live their entire lifetime. And then when the animal died, they did a biopsy. And they claimed to have seen higher levels of leukemia and lymphomas. The study is very controversial.
Why?
It's basically other people have looked at it, and they said that they were diagnosing cancers that really weren't cancers. So they see a blotch on a slide, and you know, one person sees it says cancer, other people just says it's a scar from some other illness.
So that's one of the studies that we've heard about with aspartame. Now, in the past, we used to worry about saccharin causing bladder cancer, right?
Right. So that's why FDA had proposed banning saccharin in the 70s. A lot of people protested because they didn't want to give up their diet sodas. Congress postponed that moratorium. And then there was another review which indicated that rats had this mechanism. They didn't process saccharin the same way people do, and they sort of had this special biology that caused them to get bladder cancer that the scientists finally decided didn't apply to humans. And then when people looked at the epidemiological service, they looked at the health studies of people in the public, and what they couldn't find a correlation between drinking soda with saccharin and cancer.
Are any of these artificial sweeteners regulated differently, say, in Europe?
Generally, everything that's legal in the U.S. is also legal in Europe. In fact, as I mentioned, they have cyclamates and we don't.
Right. So the FDA, I guess, has been in step with what the rest of the world is doing.
Right. Everyone else seems to have looked at them too and come up with similar conclusions.
Well, I guess the bottom line is that what we do know is that sugar causes obesity, which can cause other diseases as well, whereas the verdict on some of these artificial sweeteners is not necessarily conclusive.
Well, it seems evident that aspartame has been on the market for a couple of decades, saccharin has been used for decades, that there isn't a major health issue that's very, very obvious, because there's hundreds of people, millions of people using these, and, you know, people aren't dropping dead from it.
But as we do know, you know, look at trans fats. Apparently we've been using trans fats since the 1900s, if that can be right. And we only now realize that, oh, guess what? These cause cancer and we shouldn't have been eating them. So maybe a couple decades is not that much in the grand scope of nutritional studies.
Right. So there is this lingering wondering about what happens over decades of use. On the other hand, but then you're trading off that you know sugar, if you eat too much of it, causes weight gain. And that's shown up in studies. And we know that's directly connected to quite a few number of diseases.
Now, you mentioned the headaches that some people get with, was it aspartame?
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting reading through the comments on your piece in the New York Times. A lot of people had a lot to say about these sweeteners. People feel sort of passionately about them. And I did read several comments where people did talk about those headaches that they had and foggy headedness from diet soda. What about claims like that? Are we just supposed to ascribe that to the differentials in our own bodies? Or is there something there, do you think, that needs more looking into?
So about 20 years ago, when there's a lot more controversy over aspartame. So a lot of people did come forward and said they had headaches, they developed Graves' disease when they drank these Diet Colas, and these symptoms disappeared when they stopped drinking the Diet Cola. And as far as I can tell, these stories largely remain anecdotal. So there was some people who did said this, but it never seemed systematic enough that you could really pin it on the on aspartame. And so there is a placebo effect. So usually you think about the placebo effect, you know, getting sugar pills and it solves your disease. This also affects negatively. So if you think you might be getting something bad happening to you because you're drinking diet soda, then perhaps that suggests it's enough to give you symptoms.
Hmm.
I'm not saying that it's not affecting people, and you know if it does give you symptoms, then you should avoid it. And actually there is a certain number of people who have a genetic disorder that so they can't digest aspartame, and they are specifically warned away from that sweetener.
Tell us a little bit about how these artificial sweeteners work in the body. How is it they fool us into thinking we're getting something calorically dense and sweet?
So as everyone knows, on the tongue, there's a number of different taste receptors. There's sweet, sour, salty, and umami. So the sweet receptors is two proteins. And when a sugar molecule comes up next to it, it sort of latches on, and this causes these proteins to change shape, and that basically sets off a reaction that causes a neuron to send a signal to the brain that says, this tastes sweet. So what happens with these artificial sweeteners is you're looking for a molecule that's not sugar and doesn't have any calories that interacts with this receptor on the tongue in the same way. And once the receptor is excited, it sends the same signal, and your brain can't tell a difference between something that's sugar and something that's not sugar.
Do we know that there's an effect from drinking diet soda as far as our health? I mean, do people lose weight when they stop drinking sugar sweetened soda and drink one of these sugar substitute sodas?
So there was a study that was published last year by Harvard, I think, and other researchers, and this is the Nurses Health Study, where they tracked 100,000 nurses over decades, and they were looking at correlations between different foods and weight gain or weight loss. And this was the study that actually showed that the strongest correlation with weight gain was potatoes. But it did show that people who drank sugared sodas gained weight, and it was a significant amount. And people who drank diet or zero-calorie sodas lost a little bit of weight. That may not be significant. But there was definitely a definite difference between someone who's drinking sugared soda and someone who's drinking a diet soda.
Potatoes are the number one link to weight gain?
French fries.
Fried potatoes.
Well, that's presumably a proxy for people who are going to fast food a lot or sitting in front of the TV eating a lot of potato chips.
Yeah, it's interesting. You don't see many moves to ban French fries or potato chips, but you are seeing moves to ban soda, right?
Right. Well, potatoes, I don't think anyone's looked at it closely enough, but I imagine there are healthy ways to cook potatoes, and it's probably not the food itself. It's more of a lifestyle correlation. Whereas soda, there's no nutritional value to a soda. It is really just empty calories. And a potato, no, it's not the most nutritious, but there's still food in there.
Well, we have one caller already before we've given the number, but let's go ahead and take him. We've got Eric joining us from Oshkosh. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
My question is about insulin and artificial sweeteners. Now, do these artificial sweeteners cause an insulin response, and with no sugars to digest, then, you know, you get extra hungry. You get hungrier because your body's full of insulin, but you don't have any sugar in it.
Right. So there have been studies in cellulars, I believe, and also in some animal studies that do show that because these artificial sweeteners are exciting the sweet receptors, that you do get an insulin response to it. I don't believe it's as large as with sugar.
So diabetics should stay away from artificial sweeteners?
No, it's still better than sugar, much better. And I mean, the advice overall is eat less sugar or eat less sweets. And if you can avoid all of them, you know, and eat fruits and such, that's always the best advice. But diabetics can use various artificial sweeteners safely. Then there's a question of, so there's also been a suggestion that because you get the insulin response that you, that your body's expecting something sweet, that that's going to send you off to eat some more food that to satisfy this response, and then you're going to gain weight regardless of, even though you're eating artificial sweetener instead of sugar. It hasn't shown up in the population. So like in the nursery study, that effect was not seen.
Can you explain that a little? Why would your body expect to eat more food just because it got a hint of sweetness?
So you've basically given a hint that something sweet. So the body's sort of expecting. So sugar is sort of a hint that you're about to eat something nutritious, because that's why we sort of have the sweet receptor, that sweet things tend to be full of calories. And therefore, once the body has tasted something sweet, it sort of tries to prepare itself to receive calories.
Hmm.
And then sometimes there's a thought that you've now tricked the body by making it think it's going to get calories and doesn't, and therefore it's going to, and because it didn't, it's going to crave to get the calories from you, and then therefore get you to eat more.
So the concern was that it would sort of excite your expectations for hunger, but then you just had a zero-calorie soda, which isn't really going to satisfy
right.
your body.
Right.
But you're saying that that's not what they found? That was a...
At least in this Harvard Health study, they did not see that effect. And it's something that's been hypothesized, but they haven't seen that in the data yet.
Well, we're talking artificial sweeteners this hour with our first guest, Kenneth Chang, who's a science reporter for The New York Times. And we're curious about your experience with artificial sweeteners. Do you have a preferred sweetener that you go to when you see all those colored packets on the table in the restaurant? There's the yellow and the blue and the pink. Or do you just go for regular sugar? Maybe there's also honey and agave nectar, too. Those are getting popular. But we're talking about the ones that are made in the lab this hour. And do you trust them? Do you find that you eat more? What is your experience with artificial sweeteners? You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And you can send your email to talk@wpr.org. And also, do you just think they're satisfying? Do they cut it for you when you want something sweet? I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm filling in this week for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 11 o'clock today, Larry Mueller talks with a conservation warden about his 31 years on the job. You might be surprised by some of the situations they have to handle in the course of their work. That's 11 o'clock on Larry Mueller's show. I'm Veronica Rickert, in this week for Kathleen Dunn, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're talking about artificial sweeteners this hour with Kenneth Chang, the science reporter for The New York Times, and wondering about your experiences with artificial sweeteners. Whether you have one that you feel better about, that you're loyal to, and that you like the taste of, and whether you have any lingering misgivings about them. And we'll go ahead and take our first phone call now. We have Chris joining us in Milwaukee. Hi, Chris.
Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, I was just wondering, Veronica, if Kenneth has heard anything about potential link between attention deficit disorder and artificial sweeteners.
Mm. All right, thanks. Kenneth?
I haven't seen any studies with that, and I guess I'm not particularly sure which one he's referring to. I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that.
Well, in terms of anecdotal evidence, you know, again, from your website, people talked about sort of getting foggy-headed with aspartame.
Right. I mean, even with sugar, I mean, there's been stories forever that you give kids sugar, something sweet, and they become hyperactive. And I believe even that's questionable.
All right. Well, thank you much for your call, Chris. And we move to Sherry joining us in Stevens Point. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. I just thought I'd make a comment that I just prefer Splenda for some reason. I'm sure why I like that over other artificial sweeteners. But you had mentioned the being hungry after drinking a diet soda, and I find that to be more related to the caffeine in the diet soda than the artificial sweetener.
Oh, that's interesting. So I'm glad you brought up Splenda, because that is sort of the sweetener du jour right now. It seems to be the one that most physicians recommend. Kenneth, what does Splenda have to recommend it?
Well, the marketing, it points out that sucralose, which is the sweetener in Splenda, starts out with as sugar, so as sucrose. And what they do is replace a few pieces of that molecule with chlorine, which makes it so that the body can't digest it anymore. So it's similar enough so that it's exciting the taste receptor to give the sweet taste, but then the body can't break it apart, and that's why you're not getting calories from it.
So the appeal then again is that it's more natural because it begins its life as sugar. But in your article, you talk about how people are worried about, not to freak you out, Sherry, but they are worried about those chlorine molecules that exist and how they're processed in the body. Kenneth, do you want to flesh that out?
So when I talked to Gary Williams, who's one of the people who's looked at this, most of the sucralose just goes straight through the body. And even the ones that are absorbed by the body, it doesn't break it down. It just gets immediately flushed back out. So almost none of the chlorine ever gets released. So it doesn't look like that's a concern.
What about there was something in the article about how chlorine molecules are durable and it's been found in drinking water?
Right. So because sucralose is so durable and it doesn't get broken apart, it goes into the drinking water supply, and people have actually measured amounts of sucralose in drinking water now.
And what would the health implications be there?
It's probably not a health implication for us because it's at very low levels, and already the indication is that sucralose is safe for us. But then people are wondering, if it gets out in the environment, other animals and organisms, when they start eating sucralose, how is it going to affect them?
Well, thank you so much for your call, Sherry. And Mike next from Kenosha. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hey, go ahead.
Hi. I just heard your guest say that something about aspartame and being a placebo effect to having migraines and stuff. And I'm a diabetic, and I was thinking I was doing the right thing by drinking diet sodas to refresh myself and whatnot. But I was also suffering very severe migraine headaches. Had no idea why. I was on medicine for it, and my wife said, maybe it's the aspartame. Why don't you stop drinking diet soda? So I stopped drinking diet soda. I've not had a migraine now for almost 2 years.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, there are other people like you who are saying that. Kenneth?
So a lot of people do have different bodies. I'm not going to say that everything's in your head. And I don't believe anyone's really done a systematic study looking at aspartame and headaches. Or there might be some that indicate that actually there might be some connection. So basically, if it gives you headaches, obviously you should stop drink it or find something else to drink.
Well, Mike, let me ask you that. If you're still with us, so you've given up the diet sodas, where do you turn to when you want something sweet that maybe isn't the intense hit of sugar?
I've tried Splenda, and when I tried Splenda, that stuff gave me abdominal problems. So now I'm back to sugar. I just use sugar, and I counteract it with insulin.
Use it more sparingly, I suppose.
Yeah, and along with the migraines was violent throwing up. I mean, aspartame is almost like poison to me. And it is certainly not in my head.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that perspective. And Kenneth, I know that you are out of time, but I want to thank you very much for joining us this hour.
Oh, thank you.
We've been joined by Kenneth Chang, science reporter for The New York Times, and his piece about choosing a sugar substitute is running currently in that paper, and you can weigh in with your comment or see what other people have written. And now we're going to go to our next guest, who is Dr. Ayala Laufer-Kahana. She's a physician specializing in pediatrics and medical genetics. Dr. Ayala Laufer-Kahana, welcome.
Delighted to be here.
We've got some people on the line already, but I want to get your take on artificial sweeteners. Where do you think they stand for us right now as far as what we know about them?
Maybe before we get to which packet to choose, we should back up a little and see how we got to Candyland. Sweet life is a relatively new thing. Sweet-tasting food is really rare in nature. There are fruits and vegetables, and they have some sweetness to them, but they're also packed with a lot of nutrition. There's fiber and water and micronutrients, and they're nutritious and filling. And honey was hard to come by. It's only in modern times that concentrated sweetness in the form of sugar became abundant, and then high fructose corn syrup came to the scene and made sweetness dirt cheap. And we all love sweet-tasting food. And since our preference is innate, it's there even before birth, and it activates all the reward systems in our brain, and the love of sweet food served our species, really. It led babies to crave mother's milk and all other humans to seek ripe fruit. This has really been hijacked by all the people that make food for us. They understand the seductive lure of sweetness, so they started adding sugars to a lot of things that generally are not sweet. Think of water and milk and cereal. Everything started to be sweet. And now we eat 15% of our daily calories in sugar. Later, we came to know that eating that much sugar is a problem. It causes obesity and a lot of other health problems. And then to our rescue came artificial non-caloric sweetness, offering the same kind of sweetness without a caloric price tag. So it's sort of a free lunch. It's really it's supposed to be terrific. Now the question is, are they safe? And are they doing what they set out to do? Help us fight obesity.
And are they?
Well, the question of safety, you discussed part of it with Kenneth in the first part. And they've now been in use for a century. And although there are nagging questions about cancer risks, no such link has been confirmed in humans. That, of course, is no guarantee. But in medical circles, the concerns about cancer are not the central one. It's really the metabolic concerns that dominate the discussion in scientific circles. And the question is, do we lose weight by going diet? Do we gain weight by going diet, you know, diet drinks and artificial sweeteners? And are there other metabolic consequences?
And what have you seen in your practice?
Well, I think that intuitively people, when they choose non-caloric artificial sweeteners, they do that. Unless they're diabetics, they do it to lose or maintain weight. Now, surprisingly, epidemiological studies really suggest that diet soda is linked with weight gain, not with weight loss.
Why would that be?
And that's a very interesting question, and I think that we don't really know the answer yet. We are troubled by the findings, and none of the studies are terrific. There, a lot of them are epidemiological studies, so they're not controlled studies in which we have two groups in which we carefully follow a group that we assign either to artificial sweetness or to sugar or to no sweetness at all, and then follow over a long period of time. So we can't say that it's cause and effect. But why is it? First of all, as you discussed in the first part, artificial sweeteners train taste receptors to prefer intense sweetness. So part of it might be that because we are taking in so much sweetness, we reject less sweet foods. And it puts us in a habit of seeking sweetness rather than more complex and mellow flavors. And just because things are sweet, they encourage sugar cravings and sugar dependence. So repeated exposure to sweetness, whether it's sugar or artificial sweetness, just changes our flavor preference and it makes us eat more. Another thing that you touched upon was the dissociation between the signal and the outcome. When you eat something sweet, it signifies to the body that energy and nutritious food are on the way. So there are hormones and pathways enacted, the gut starts moving and insulin is secreted. The outcome of the disconnect between the signal, sweetness, and no energy, this decoupling might be a problem. So we're not exactly sure, but it might be that activation of the pleasure component, the sweetness, might contribute to increased appetite. And the lack of complete satisfaction, meaning you now have something sweet, but, you know, energy didn't come, so you're not completely satisfied, that might fuel food-seeking behavior. Hmm. And that's what happens, at least in some of the animal studies.
Oh, that's interesting.
The other thing is that we know that we're drinking diet. So
so it could be, I didn't get
right,
what I wanted.
So that gives us permission to indulge. You know, it's just a diet soda, so that doesn't count, right?
So I'm going to have the cheesecake.
Absolutely.
Right.
It couples really well with the cake.
Well, let's take in some of our callers now who've been waiting. We've got Frank joining us from Rochester. Hello, Frank.
Good morning, Doctor. Good morning, Veronica. It's a pleasure to speak with both of you.
And you.
Thank you. Very interesting conversation this morning. I sold food for 25 years to restaurants, and I called on Moyer's Bakery, Dobke's, Wilbert's, National Bakery, and for many years, the bakers used pure ingredients. They still do today, but what has happened, I grew up in a big Greek family, and we made loukoumades and baklava. We used honey, pure ingredients, orange, and we made natural desserts. And we weren't rewarded every day with dessert when we were kids. But today, it's like we give a dog a treat. We give kids treats today. They eat too much sugar, plus aspartame and all these artificial sweeteners. They're actually created in a lab, and the reason a lot of them have done that, I feel, with my food service background, food plants could process corn syrup a lot cheaper than they could granulated sugar or pure ingredients. They made more money on it. They could sweeten things faster. And in the last 30 years, our market was flooded with products that had a lot of sweetened corn syrup and, you know, more unnatural products than natural. What do you two think of that?
That's interesting, Frank, and interesting hearing about how you feel things have changed in the food manufacturing business. What do you think, Doctor?
I completely agree with you, Frank. The one of the main problems with the introduction of high fructose corn syrup is how cheap it is, because it became really easy to make food that is made out of really very poor ingredients tasty. And nowadays, since the price of sugar is rising, actually artificial sweeteners are making their way into processed foods just because the market price is determining that, not just the desire to make lower-calorie foods. But the main thing is really that sugar consumption has risen to a tremendous amount to our detriment. It's really creating havoc on our health. And the problem is that sugar is a very, very strong habit. We love sugar. Our brain just lights up when something is sweet. So for a food maker, the easiest way to sell more food is to make it sweeter, and you make it sweeter by the cheapest way possible.
Well, thank you so much for that call, Frank. And I know, Dr. Kahana, when my son, our first child, was born, we were trying to keep him away, as the conventional wisdom says now, from sweet things, because we didn't want him to develop the taste. We wanted him to crave the better, more nutritional foods first before the sugar. And one Halloween, I guess we let him go to a couple houses. I think he might have been 2.5 or 3, and he just had one little one little Mars bar or something, and he was shouting "Kande" all the way home, and it was all over. I don't know. It's a hard thing to fight, isn't it?
It is, and I think there's room for sweet things. I think that there should be treats in life. I'm suddenly happy that chocolate exists in the world. The question is how much, and moderation is really key. They always say that in toxicology, that the dose makes the poison. I don't think that sugar is toxic, but I think that it has its place. A dessert is something that you enjoy every once in a while. It's a treat. On the other hand, when it becomes part of everything, breakfast is now a dessert. Most of the cereals are really, they should be called a dessert. Sweet drinks are sweet drinks. That's what they are. There really is no room for that, for everything to become sweet, because it's just so habituating.
Well, we're talking artificial sweeteners this hour with our guest, Dr. Ayala Laufer Kahana. She's a physician specializing in pediatrics and medical genetics. And we want to know about your experience with artificial sweeteners. Do you use them, and do you trust them? And what do you think about the way they taste in the mouth? Do they substitute for something like sugar for you or for honey? Do you think we have gotten too used to sweet things, as Dr. Kahana has been saying? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert, in for Kathleen Dunn, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert with you. I'm in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. As we talk about artificial sweeteners with our guest, Dr. Ayala Laufer-Kahana, who is a physician specializing in pediatrics and medical genetics. And we'll take our next call now. Nikki joins us from Appleton. Hi, Nikki.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I used to use Sweet and Low and then Splenda, but a few years ago I switched to Stevia. Which, from my understanding, is all natural, and they even make a soda called Zevia that's sweetened with stevia. And I find that it doesn't cause those headaches that other guests and you guys have talked about earlier. And hopefully it's healthy, but I'm interested to hear what the doctor has to say about that.
Okay, great. Yeah, Nikki, echoing what a lot of people have heard about stevia is that it's more natural. What do you make of that, Dr. Kahana?
Well, stevia is a plant, and it's been utilized in South America for a very, very long time. And recently, it was introduced to the American market. I think it's 2008 when it the FDA allowed it into foods. Part of what's in the market is very purified forms of stevia. So some say, well, first of all, if you like it, using it in moderation probably is not going to cause any harm. The other issues that some people have, and CSPI, the Center for Science and the Public Interest, it actually does not recommend stevia for use because it feels that it has not been studied enough. And the purified form is perhaps not like the plant that is used in South America. Other people reject stevia for taste, so it's still a question whether this will replace the artificial sweeteners that are on the market. It is a more natural form. The issues might be taste, and we'll see where it goes. On the other hand, I think that perhaps this is a better solution, but the real issue we need to address is that as a society, we need to leave Candyland. We just need a fundamental change in how we view food. We can't just say, okay, we sweetened everything too much with sugar, now we're going to sweet it with something else.
Hmm. So is it possible to wean yourself off of this sugar craving that everyone seems to have? How do you do it?
Well, I think, first of all, as you did with your child, I think the most important thing is not to instill bad habits in young children. And young children are the ones craving sugar the most. Kids have a desire for sweetness, and the sweeter the better. So the most important thing is to start them off in the right habits and not wean them into sweet drinks from milk. And then, of course, every habit can be changed. I think that people can know from their own experience what the best way for them is. And many experts agree that there's room for artificial sweeteners and, you know, non-caloric sweeteners as a pathway towards taking in less sweet. So it's sort of Kenneth had in his article, it's sort of a nicotine patch. You take in artificial sweeteners when your desire is really to eat food more in its natural form, less sweet.
Yeah, the nicotine patch analogy is an interesting one for using these sweeteners. Let's go next to Bob in Sheboygan. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Thanks for putting me on.
Sure.
I've been connected with the development of artificial sweeteners almost from the inception, especially the cyclamate and aspartame. And, you know, I think that the promotion of these things, the popularity of it, the prospect of guilt-free consumption of sugar has sort of deterred really into good research into this thing. As far as the research and development on aspartame was atrocious when Searle was developing it. And it got approved primarily for political reasons when Mr. Rumsfeld got to be president of Searle. What I'm saying is that the research has been less than rigorous. And I agree with the doctor and most of what she said. People, not only do companies sweeten stuff for cheapness, but they also do it for promotion and to make profit. And the prospect of giving people free consumption of sugar is part of the dynamic. As far as weight loss and appetite, again, I think that it's at least anecdotal that the appetite is increased by a lot of these sweeteners, and it's probably ignored or and people still go guilt-free with it.
Let's give our doctor a chance to respond to some of that. Dr. Kahana?
Bob, thanks for the question. I think that a lot of people are worried that a lot of research, actually the research that is presented to the FDA before approval is granted, is research done by parties that have...
a stake.
Yeah. Absolutely. So a lot of this is sponsored by the parties that are looking to make gains by the approval. So if people, and it's true, I think the science is not satisfying to rigorous experts. They feel that the science of the metabolic consequences is really, it's really not giving us an answer. We don't really know what it does. The feeling is that it does not help with weight loss. It might cause weight gain. There are studies, those are also epidemiological, that link artificial sweeteners with a metabolic syndrome, with stroke, with type 2 diabetes, but unless studies rigorously done, controlled studies are done, we won't really know.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Bob. And we go next to Nancy joining us from Madison. Hey, Nancy.
Hi. I'm just so interested in Bob's phone call. I'm very much on the same page with Bob about the corporate interest in making money off of artificial sweeteners. I'm a mom. I'm a 41-year-old mom of a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old, and I've never given them artificial sweeteners. My kids, I just think between the corporate profit aspect of it and the whole idea that it's a chemical compound in their diet is not what I want in my kids' diet. But my real question or comment is really on blood sugar stabilization. I really think we as a society have gotten caught up in a calorie. All calories are created equally, and so I think the zero-calorie aspect is so intriguing to people, but all the reading I've done over the years is really about weight maintenance being about blood sugar stabilization, and these artificial sweeteners shoot your blood sugar levels way up. You come crashing down, and you have cravings more than you've ever had before. So, you know, it's interesting. I respect the doctor when she's talking about the studies on stevia, but the people that don't want stevia out there are probably the people that are going to stand to lose money if we end up going against the way of artificial sweeteners. So anyway, there's my comment for the day. And by the way, I cut out artificial sweeteners 20 years ago. And at age 40, I weigh less now than I do when I was in my 20s trying to do a fat-free diet and eating a lot of sugar and artificial sweeteners. So anyway, there's my comment, and I'm wondering if the doctor has any comments on that.
Okay, thank you so much, Nancy. Appreciate it. And Dr. Kahana?
I think the American Academy of Pediatrics is with you. It really has no official recommendation regarding the use of non-caloric sweeteners because they say there are limited studies in children. We just don't know.
And what about the keeping blood sugar stable to lose weight? What do we know about that?
Well, I think that many methods have been studied for weight loss. And I think our caller's right that a calorie is a calorie. On the other hand, different foods have different effects on satiety, and therefore some foods make it easier to lose weight while others make it a really, really difficult task. There are certain diets that look specifically at what food does to blood sugar. One of them is the low glycemic diet, and it has shown some benefit. It does seem that following such a plan in which you don't let sugar spike too much can be a good plan. It's not necessarily an easy one, but a low glycemic diet, which is a diet in which you try not to eat a lot of refined sugars or foods that release a lot of sugar into the blood, does seem to be a very good plan for some people.
Well, thank you again, Nancy. And we move to Joe next in Johnson Creek. Hello, Joe.
Hi. Before a quick question, maybe you can comment on the previous caller, if I'm not mistaken. Did she just say that artificial sweeteners make your blood sugar skyrocket? How could that be when diabetics have been consuming this kind of stuff forever?
Dr. Kahana, do you want to clarify?
You are right. Artificial sweeteners have been designed for diabetics, and there is some rise in insulin after them, but it does not make your blood sugar rise because it actually there is no sugar there.
So you get a slight rise.
It might activate hormonal pathways, but there is no sugar rise after consuming artificial sweeteners.
Okay, Joan, what was your question?
You know, when I remember.
I'm sorry. Can you start over, Joe? We didn't have you up. Go ahead.
Well, on the Splenda itself, I remember when it first came out, they were saying it's derived from sugar, and then I had it for about a year until I did some research, and I knew it was too good to be true. I did the research, and they say there's not one of the main things you take away after you read all the stuff out there is that there's just not enough research, and it's not been researched enough to really know. Whereas saccharin or, you know, even aspartame has had a lot more time on the market to be looked at. So that's why I think not only that it's 100 times stronger than maybe the other sweeteners, I'm really suspicious about the Splenda. And so maybe she can comment on that. And the last quick thing, though, is I would like to say that diet, depending on the person, if you drink diet soda, for me, I lose weight if I stay on diet soda. As soon as I switch to regular sugary drinks or something, I notice I gain weight. So I think it's a person-to-person thing because there's many other variables, like the doctor mentioned, that go on when people drink diet. They may be looking for other pleasures because they think they're doing a good thing by having the diet soda, so they have the cheeseburger or, you know what I'm saying? But I think if you just were to switch that one variable, so I remember when I was a kid, this kid was heavy, and all he did was switch to diet, and he lost all this weight. So if that's like the only variable you change, and you take away all the calories from that sugar, how could you not lose weight? So there's something else going on here with the, you know how this is, where they say, someone makes a blanket statement and everyone walks around and repeats this blanket statement. Now diet makes you gain weight, you know. So.
All right. Well, thank you, Joe. And Dr. Kahana, what are your thoughts on that?
Joe, I think that your argument for going to the sweetener that has been in the market for the longest time makes sense. I think that's one way to approach it. You want the one that has been in the market and has proven itself over time. And sucralose, Splenda, is a relatively newcomer. I think it's been introduced in 1998. So if that's your choice, that's fine. Other people have objections to all. Other people say that sucralose... The studies on sucralose showed less worrying outcomes. As far as reducing calories through diet drinks, I think the math says that for every, let's say, can of soda, which is 150 calories, if you replace it with diet soda and do nothing else, you will reduce 150 calories, and that can lead to weight loss. And in the short term, that might make sense. Unfortunately, studies showing over a long period of time show that that's probably not what happens, and people don't change just that. And therefore, as a tactic, we're probably not reducing these calories. We're probably bringing them in and maybe their friends in another way.
So I guess when it's all said and done, Dr. Kayana, you say we should just cut down on our sugar and try to wean ourselves from craving so much sweetness, right? And we're about 20 seconds for your answer.
Yes, I think it's time to leave Candyland. I think that we have to be realistic, and a normal diet is one in which not everything can be sweet. We just have to go back to eating natural food, and natural food is not that sweet. Occasionally, it's very sweet, but most of it has wonderful taste, very varied and complex, but not that sweet.
Well, thank you so much for your time this hour. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it, too.
Dr. Ayala Laufer-Kahana, physician specializing in pediatrics and medical genetics, with us this half hour as we talked about artificial sweeteners. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and for answering your phone calls. I'm Veronica Rickert on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.